Get Some by Flippy Spoon, read by CookieMom6067. Following a few months of aggressive flirting on the Enterprise and a drunkenly dialed video message that Spock would like to have melded himself into forgetting, if it were possible, a date on Starbase 7 for Spock and Jim had finally been scheduled and was, in fact, imminent. The real issue now, according to Chapel and Ortegas, was what Spock should wear. "I was going to wear my uniform," Spock said, as they loomed over him in his quarters. He sat in a chair holding a cup of tea, slightly frightened. "Absolutely not," Ortegas exploded. "Are you completely out of your mind?" Chapel said. 40 minutes later, Spock was modeling a pair of black wool blend pants, which fit much more loosely than the Starfleet issue pants or Vulcan leggings he was used to wearing. In fact, he had considered wearing Vulcan robes to the date, but was compelled to try something different for this particular occasion. "Did you fabricate these?" Spock said. Erica had brought the pants from her own room, which was strange because they could not have possibly belonged to her. "No," Erica held her hands on her hips. "They're my great-grandfather's pants." Christine and Spock stared at Erica. "What?" Christine said. "Why, it's sentimental value," Erica said. "Pants?" Chapel made a complicated gesture in the air with her hands, as if to add a visual exclamation. "Excuse me, Christine," Erica said haughtily. "My great-grandfather, Mateo Maximo Alvaro Torino Ortegas, built warp cores, and in his free time, he went dancing in those very pants. They're important pants." "Noted," Christine put her hands in surrender. "What is this jewelry?" Spock fidgeted with a loop of silver chain hanging from the right pocket. "Oh, that's a wallet chain," Erica said. "I guess they were in vogue at the time, but even then, they weren't using them anymore." Spock blinked at her. "What is a wallet?" "You know," Chapel shrugged. "It's like a pouch thing," Erica said. "They used to carry money in them." "Right, money," Chapel added. "It's where you carry your cash and your cards for identification, stuff like that." Spock said, "Why did they need more than one card?" Erica and Christine shrugged. "I think they look great," Erica said, clapping her hands. "I think you should go vintage when you wear civvies, Spock. It's what all the kids are doing at the academy." "Yeah, if you're a hipster," Christine snarked. Erica stroked her chin, regarding Spock, who was looking down at the fabricated sneakers they had given him. Vintage didn't quite cover it. The style of the shoes was absolutely antiquated. They had laces and white rubber toes, and a circular white patch on one side with a blue star insignia. "Spock is a total hipster," Erica finally said. "And what is a hipster?" Spock asked. "See?" Erica threw up her hands. "He doesn't even know what a hipster is. Total hipster." "Am I meant to just wear this white t-shirt?" It seemed overly simple and a little like wearing underwear in public. "Yeah, trust me," Christine said. "It works. We just need the right jacket. But that shouldn't be too old-fashioned. You don't want to look costumey. Maybe something more timeless." There was a heap of fabricated jackets they had already dismissed on the floor. Spock's door pinged, and he automatically said, "Enter." Commander Chin Riley walked in carrying a pad, and Spock pursed his lips, mildly embarrassed at the first officer seeing this absurd display. Una smiled slyly. "What do we have going on here, ladies?" "And Spock, I just came to drop this off. Chris has a little project from the brass on Romulan surveillance. Wants your input. But no rush, Spock. Seriously, enjoy this week like everyone else." She set the pad down on his desk. "Spock has a big date with Jim Kirk on Starbase 7 tomorrow," Chapel said. She rested her elbow on Erica's shoulder, "which gives us a nice excuse to dress him up like a little Vulcan doll." "It is a date of medium size," Spock countered, "which is a nonsensical metric for a social occasion." "I see," Una nodded seriously and walked in a slow circle around Spock, who crossed his arms, mildly uncomfortable at the inspection. "Vintage, huh? Spock, you're such a hipster. I love it." "That's what I said," Erica cackled. "What's the jacket?" Una said. "It's got to be sexy." "We can't find a good one," Chapel curled her lip. Una rifled through the discarded jackets on the floor, muttering and clicking her tongue. Okay, none of these. Yep, I got this. I'll be back in a jiff. Una swept out of the room and Erica said, So, Spock, I'm going to loan you something else, too. This is just for good luck. That is unnecessary, and I do not believe in luck. Well, I do. Erica reached into her pocket, taking out a small Swiss Army knife with a pearlescent onyx inlay and pressed it into Spock's waiting palm. A knife. Spock fiddled with it, examining its various tools, bottle opener, corkscrew, miniature hyperspanner. It is a date, not an away mission. It's for luck, Erica insisted. I just happen to suspect this date is important. Call it a hunch. I do not believe in hunches either, Spock murmured. But he was suddenly wondering if he should start carrying around a miniature hyperspanner just in case. Una returned, carrying something black and made of leather. Put this on, Una said, handing the garment over to Spock. Spock shrugged on the jacket and everyone gasped as he straightened the sleeves and tugged the hem straight over his t-shirt. The jacket was a race-style moto jacket with a short collar which, with the V-necked tee, accentuated his long neck. It fit like a glove to Spock's body. There were two red stripes on the left pocket. Spock arched a brow, looking at himself in the mirror. I like this, he muttered. Commander, Chapel said, where did you get that? It's from the back of Chris's closet, Una said a little smugly. He hasn't worn it in 20 years. He won't miss it. Looks great on you, Spock. Dimly, Spock wondered if Una often rifled through the captain's closet. Thank you, Spock said, although he supposed he should have been thanking Captain Pike. Now, Chapel said, about the hair. Do not touch my hair, Spock said darkly. Understood. The Enterprise was slowly docking at Starbase 7, and Spock was getting ready to leave. Unused to the almost giddy sensation of jitters the thought of his impending date with Jim was causing, to make matters just a little more nerve-wracking, due to extensive refits on both the Enterprise and the Farragut, they would not be allowed back on their respective ships for 12 hours. So if things went very badly for some reason, he could not immediately return to the haven of his quarters. Spock's door pinged and he frowned, scanning his cabin in case Erica and Christine had left something behind, but his room was perfectly tidy. It's Sam Kirk. Sam Kirk, he heard from the door. Spock raised an eyebrow. Enter. The door swooshed open and Sam walked in, sighing and looking like he was about to vibrate out of his skin. Sir, so I wanted to speak to you before we disembark. Concerning what, Lieutenant? Spock said. He could not quite stop fidgeting with the cuffs of his jacket just because the imitation leather was so pleasingly soft. It's about my brother. Sam stood at parade rest. I know you're going on a date with him. Spock himself had mentioned he would be seeing Jim to Sam, who would be spending some quality time with his brother later in the week. He could not imagine why Sam should look so grim about it. Yes, Spock said. Have you considered... Sam shrugged and smiled hopefully. Not doing that? Elaborate, Spock said, narrowing his eyes. Must I? Sam shook his head. Okay, fine. I don't want anyone to get hurt, if you must know. Spock was still at a bit of a loss, and since Sam was not being especially clear, he could only assume what was being implied. Are you concerned in regards to your brother's reputation? Spock only knew vaguely what he himself was talking about, as that sort of talk was distasteful to him. Sam's expression darkened. That reputation is bullshit. I am glad to hear it, Spock said. It seemed like the polite thing to say. In truth, he didn't care anything at all about Jim's reputation. Sam looked up at the overhead as if gathering strength from it. My brother is an arrogant, egotistical, pig-headed megalomaniac. Spock's brow furrowed, and a defense of Jim Kirk started somewhere in his stomach and began crawling up his throat. Yet just as he opened his mouth, Sam went on. But Jim has been through a hell of a lot. A hell of a lot. You have no idea. I have no idea. And a lot of people think he's some kind of player, but sir, he's really not. He's not at all. He throws his heart away like he's got 1,000 backups. Then he gets stomped just over and over. Sam took a breath. He seemed annoyed at himself for coming to his brother's defense. And then the rumor mill starts up all over again, and everyone thinks he's some kind of Casanova because of the way he smiles. And sir, now I know relationships are messy, okay, but I mean, you break up with your fiance, and then the same day you're with Chapel, and then you're not with Chapel, and now you're going out with Jim. I'm just saying, God damn it, I know you're 10 times stronger than me, sir, but if you break my little brother's heart, then I'll be, well, I won't be able to do anything about it probably, but I'll be pissed. He just got over this whole Carol mess you don't even know, and he likes you way more than he liked her. And he liked her, okay? But you, Sam waved a hand at Spock as if taking his measure and cackled sardonically, ha, it's a whole different thing with you. So just please, for the love of Pete, be careful with Jimmy. That's it. I'm sorry. I mean, it's still true, but I'm sorry. I hate confrontation. I think I'm breaking out in hives. Sam crossed his arms. Sam, Spock said. Yes, I understand. Sam huffed through his nose and said, all right, okay, good. Also, Jim's allergic to eggs, wheat, and soy, so watch out for that. He's a dumbass about his allergies. Soy? Spock had chosen the restaurant where they'd agreed to meet up. It was a Terran vegan place. Spock had chosen it so Jim could enjoy some Terran food while he could have plenty to choose from as a vegetarian. Yeah, Sam said, do not let my idiot brother eat soy. He'll be sick for the rest of the week. Ah. The restaurant was called Patea Bay, and it was one of several popular restaurants on the starbase, which boasted a number of eateries, clubs, bars, boutiques, and other vendors. Most of the crew of the Enterprise and the Farragut would be hanging around the lower decks. This was where the fun stuff was. Recreational facilities, earthier bars, louder clubs, more casual eateries. Around the upper middle decks, one found the station's famous Tropical Arboretum, fancier restaurants, hotel suites, the command center, several embassies and residences. This was just one side of the station. The other side housed a large science station, medical facilities, engineering, and docking bays, and ops. Patea Bay sat in the middle, comfortable but nice. Now, though, Spock had concerns as he waited in the bustling plaza, a solid 5 minutes early. Spock kept having to step around people, and finally he pressed up against a wall as crowds of Rigelians kept bumping into him. Apparently, there was a Rigelian boutique close by. Thankfully, he wasn't the only one being careful of the time, as Kirk showed up just 30 seconds later, and Spock's breath hitched a little at finally seeing him in person. Also, he looked great. In a charcoal gray sweater that looked so soft, Spock had an uncharacteristic urge to reach out and touch it. Kirk beamed at him. Spock! He touched Spock's arm, just a welcoming yet non-invasive touch to say hello, and Spock felt it down to his toes, even through the thick fabric of his jacket. How's it going? I am how well you are. Spock closed his eyes, and the half-human side of him wanted to die a little. He cleared his throat. I am well. How are you? It seemed to amuse Kirk anyway. He laughed softly. I think I'm fantastic now. I'm finally here with you. Oh. Kirk gestured toward the restaurant. Shall we then? Yes, Spock said, but perhaps you should examine the menu first. I spoke to your brother just before we transported down. Oh no. And he mentioned your allergies. Kirk threw his head back. Ugh, flippin' Sam. Spock is fine, I swear. I've told him several times. I have hypos. My buddy Bones, he gives me hypos to take so I can eat freely if I need to, and I'm freshly stocked up. Bones? Spock said warily. He's a doctor. Kirk took his hand, and Spock was immediately exposed to just how happy Jim was to be with him, beyond which there was just the same sense of nervous giddiness Spock was feeling. Trust me, I'll be fine. I do not know that I'd trust a doctor with a name like Bones, Spock said, following Kirk inside. Inside, they were shown to a table by a window with a glorious view of a nebula. But Spock hardly noticed it and could not quite concentrate on what he should order. He was busy watching the parade of expressions across Kirk's face as he read his menu. "Ooh, pad thai. I've never tried that," Kirk murmured to himself. He fidgeted with his bottom lip. "Ah, tom kha soup? I don't know what that is, but it sure sounds good. What are you getting?" Spock skimmed the menu quickly and said, "Green curry tofu." "Now that I've had. I love green curry." Kirk put down the menu and folded his hands on the table. "You're smiling." Spock had not realized that, and he was about to explain himself when the server came to take their order. "I have noticed that humans often say they love things," Spock said once the server had gone. "Many feel freer to say they love things or activities or concepts than to say they love people, which is counterintuitive considering the importance they place on loving people." Kirk was leaning on his hand and he shook his head, smiling to himself. "I love listening to you talk." He laughed one of those little laughs, hopefully not noticing the way Spock blushed terribly. "I swear I didn't even mean to make your point for you like that. Yeah, I don't know. I think for us there are different ways of using that word. We don't mean it in the same way in both cases. But you're not wrong that humans are free with their passion. I love that song. I love a warm blanket. Saying it to a person, well, that's serious. Some are freer with saying it to people, too. Some go their whole lives and never say that to a person. Humanity is," he shrugged, "a little funky that way." Spock opened his mouth and was about to ask if Jim had said it to many people, but he remembered what Sam had told him. He throws his heart away like he's got 1,000 backups. No, Jim had said it to a lot of people, maybe too many. He wouldn't want to be reminded of it by his date, who had never said it to anyone. Instead, he said, "funky," a curious choice of words. This amused Kirk greatly, which had been his objective. When the food arrived, Kirk ate with gusto, though his manners were careful. For his own part, Spock could not account for why he had appetite enough to eat and enjoyed the taste of the food, but could only manage about a quarter of his meal, taking occasional bites. Meanwhile, his stomach was tied up, not as if he were going to be sick, but as if small creatures might be dancing inside it. Further, every time Jim smiled up at him, he felt a little lightheaded, and his skin was far too hot. "Tell me what you love." Kirk ducked his head and laughed. "Let me rephrase that. Tell me what appeals to you most about science." Spock immediately countered that the question was far too broad, which somehow led them to a long and involved conversation about the development of the scientific method, and then a comparison of Vulcan ways of thinking about science as compared to humans. Talking to Jim Kirk was different. He'd known this to some degree already from the time they'd shared playing chess and chatting when Jim was on the Enterprise, but it was even more pronounced now. Spock got along okay with his colleagues for the most part. He valued them. He showed them undying loyalty because it was in his nature. They showed him friendship. Spock still felt himself at a distance. Jim was something else entirely. He was both endlessly fascinating and obviously just as fascinated with Spock, but not in the sometimes uncomfortable way humans were often fascinated with him. He was open in some ways, yet Spock could see that he was also very guarded, which was something Spock certainly understood. It made him a kind of mystery that Spock was thirsty to solve. Spock had to wonder if Kirk was something above Psi Null when he said, "What all goes on in that head, really? I'm dying to solve the mystery." The food had been cleared. Jim was drinking a cocktail, and Spock had ordered the same because it seemed a more auspicious choice than tea. It was sweet, and he did not dislike it. The table was lit for the evening with two candles that made Jim's eyes glitter as he leaned on his hand, gazing at Spock. Spock opted to deflect the focus off himself and back to Jim and said, "How long have you wanted to be a starship captain?" If Jim knew what he was doing, he didn't say so. He waxed poetic about his love of the stars and his mixed feelings about the ethos of Starfleet and about the importance of understanding alien cultures. And then he said, "It's strange to be born next to a cornfield in a small town on a little blue planet that's only had access to the rest of the galaxy for the space of a breath in the scope of history. And no, you belong up there. But I do. I try not to talk this way to people usually. It sounds like ego, but I've never doubted it. The only part of it I've ever been afraid of is having the right people with me, or really having the right person with me by my side. I don't think I can do it the way I'm meant to without that person. So I just hope I find them." The first time, not just that night, but ever, Jim looked nakedly vulnerable, tapping his fingers on the table and staring at Spock with wide eyes. Still, Spock had no explanation as to why he knew beyond any doubt that he was that person. His certainty was intense and strange. Spock put it aside to think about later. They finally left the restaurant, and as they walked back out onto the plaza, Kirk slipped an arm around Spock's waist so casually he didn't think anything of it for a second, and then was filled with such a desperate longing and affection, he considered dragging Jim into one of the narrow alleys between boutiques and finally finding out what it was like to kiss him. He could have done it right there in the plaza, but the prospect of displaying something so personal and intimate in front of so many people only made his stomach jumpier. "Have you seen the tropical arboretum here?" Kirk said in his ear. Spock shook his head and Kirk grinned. "You want to hit it up?" Spock was sure he would have agreed to anything Jim suggested and said, "That is agreeable." The arboretum was closed, according to the clerk behind a computer next to its shuttered entrance. The clerk was a young Andorian woman in a neon purple dress who kept demurely gazing up at Kirk as he spoke to Spock. "I'm so sorry," Kirk said, sighing. "I didn't know it ever closed." "It doesn't, usually," the Andorian said, "but it's scheduled for the monthly downpour tonight. The collection requires one all-night rainstorm every month. It's much too heavy for visitors. Starts up in an hour." Then something came over Kirk, and the light seemed to change around him as he sidled up to the Andorian with an absurdly charming smile on his face. "May I ask your name?" Tass? "Tass," Kirk nodded. "Tass. I'm Jim. This is my friend Spock. He's from Vulcan." "Oh, I figured," Tass said. She smiled at Spock. "The ears. They're very attractive ears, aren't they? Now Vulcan," Jim said, "is a desert planet. Spock has hardly seen a single tree in his life." This was abjectly and hilariously false. Spock opted not to correct him. "Really?" Tass looked a little heartbroken at this information. "You know, my cousin is Anirian. He hardly gets out of the ice, ever." She looked at Spock, who cleared his throat. "Fascinating," Spock said. "Spock has always wanted to see this arboretum," Jim said. "It's his dying wish." Tass gasped. "You're dying? But you're so young and handsome." Spock glanced at Jim, who gave him an encouraging look. Spock coughed weakly and patted his stomach. "It is a rare condition." "Ah, okay, okay." Tass hopped up from her stool. "But you can only stay an hour. I'm leaving in a minute myself. The doors will lock behind you on your way back out. Trust me, once the rain starts, you'll want to leave." They followed her to the entrance, and she keyed in a code on the entrance panel, the doors whooshing open. "I'm so sorry you're dying," she said to Spock as he passed her. "I like your shoes, though." Once the doors had closed behind them, Spock fixed Kirk with a disapproving brow, and Jim threw up his hands. "I know, I know. Listen, I have to do that stuff on missions so often, it's kind of become second nature. But trust me, she'll tell that story all week." Spock imagined himself on those kinds of missions with Kirk, and his mouth watered. "Vulcans do not lie," Spock said loftily. "However, next time, I think you should first let me know what I am dying of to improve my performance." Kirk blurted a laugh at that, and the arm came back around his waist. "I thought your little cough there was award-worthy, but I'll be sure to give you notes next time. Come on." The entrance had opened into what looked like an entire planet at first glance, a dirt path winding through it. Kirk led Spock down the trail, and Spock wondered if he was actively avoiding touching his hands. "Fascinating," Spock said, taking a look around. "There are species here from Omicron SETI 2, Rigel 2, Rigel 6, Risa." "How many planets are represented?" Kirk said. "Just so I know what I'm in for, should you list them all?" Spock glanced at him, unsure if he was causing Kirk some level of irritation, but his expression was open and inquiring. He actually wanted to know. Spock cleared his throat and stopped walking, counting as he took a quick survey of every visible bit of growth. 18, by my count," Spock said, "from observations of this location. It must be quite difficult to maintain the chemical composition of the soil for each species." "You don't say," Kirk said, his eyes all a twinkle. "I do say." I like him so much, Spock thought, and heat rose like a terrible blaze in its neck and everything above it. The thought almost seemed juvenile, or at least in the way he felt it. It was also, even in its simplicity, enormous. He was overcome with a desire to disprove it, to find some reason why Jim Kirk was not worth his time. It was an illogical notion that he instantly recognized as a result of indulging in his human half. This was the result of toying with emotion. Neurosis. And even after immediately diagnosing it, he found himself saying, "Are you at all knowledgeable on the subject of botany applied to deep space exploration?" "I studied as much as I had time for in the academy," Kirk said. "I want to explore, after all. A captain who intends to explore deep space ought to have some idea what they might be getting into, and not only rely on the science division if they can possibly help it. I would never attempt to challenge your knowledge, but I did read Ophessa's Botany of a Thousand Worlds. Sure made me look at Terran forestry differently. Do you agree with her theory of pseudo-sentience?" Spock was lightheaded again. Meanwhile, Kirk led him down into a grassy clearing surrounded by iridescent blooms of flowers that glowed in the dim imitation of nighttime of the forest. "Well," Spock swallowed, ignoring Kirk's question, "you could not possibly have risen so quickly up the command ranks and attained all the knowledge necessary to not rely on a science division." "I didn't mean that I wouldn't." "What about quantum fissures? Filaments? Did you read Pegg's Elegant Anomalies? I did not find one cadet on the command track who read it. I read it twice." "But Spock," Kirk laughed, and turned to face Spock, who found himself backed up against a blue furred palm from Rigel 2. "If you want to play 20 rounds of stump the command track grunt, we can do that." His voice dropped a few octaves, as if he were talking about dragging Spock back to his quarters on the Farragut, instead of Spock's rather impolite interrogation. Spock thought of the video message Jim had left for him, how his tone of voice belied what he was actually saying. "But we only have an hour in here before it starts pouring." "I apologize," Spock said, ducking his head, abruptly ashamed of his behavior. I do not know why." "Hey, it's okay. I mean it. I love the challenge," Kirk murmured, ducking down to force Spock to meet his eyes. "I find it stimulating." Spock raised his head, meeting Jim's gaze, and he breathed once before clapping a hand to the back of Jim's hand as he lunged forward and kissed him fiercely. Kirk kissed him back without missing a beat, as if he'd been expecting it. Maybe he had been. Then his hands were sliding up Spock's chest, hot through the thin t-shirt. Spock tasted Jim's tongue. His beard stubble was a minor surprise as it prickled along Spock's lips. Jim broke the kiss, but pressed closer against him. "I can't believe you made the first move," Kirk murmured. "I mean, you're Vulcan. I thought maybe..." "I am not an average Vulcan," Spock said, mildly embarrassed. "Spock, you're not an average anything." Then Jim leaned in and nibbled on Spock's earlobe and shut his eyes, his knees buckling. "Jim..." Spock scratched Kirk's scalp, his other hand sneaking up under that impossibly soft sweater to touch the warm skin of his back. "That is extremely pleasant." Jim chuckled in his ear. "I like the feedback. It's very helpful." He showed his appreciation with tongue kisses at the little juncture between Spock's ear and his neck, working his way down Spock's throat. He raked his nails back down Spock's chest, and Jim's hands paused around his hips. Spock grabbed Jim's left hand and tangled their fingers together, even as he pulled Jim in yet closer, mindlessly eager to press against him, and increasingly hard. "Ah," Kirk sighed and pulled away again. "Let's sit down." "You want to sit down? Unless you want to walk around." Spock answered by sitting down in the middle of the clearing and tugging Kirk's hand. "The Arboretum will be open again tomorrow." "Excellent point." Kirk sat down beside him, and they commenced a sweeter, less ambitious make-out session. Then Jim took Spock's hand and began kissing his fingertips. "That is..." Spock watched Jim's mouth meet the pads of his fingers, and the sensation seemed to travel down to his wrist and up his arm, throughout his whole body. "Vulcans have very sensitive hands." "Oh, I know," Kirk said. He pressed tender little kisses along the meaty part of Spock's palm, grazing his teeth along Spock's thumb. "I read an article." "Tell me about..." Kirk raised his head and nodded at the blue fir tree. "Tell me about that tree. Where's it from? You know, all that stuff." "Curious." "Rigel, too. They have immense rainforest biomes," Spock muttered. It was difficult to concentrate as Kirk made love to his hand. "In the summer, the trunks shed their fur and the wind blows it away, but it has a..." Kirk slipped two fingers into his mouth and raised his eyes to Spock, sucking softly. He nodded encouragingly. "The tree fur has a symbiotic relationship to the..." Spock swallowed, rapidly losing focus as Kirk sucked on his fingers. "Wildflowers of Rigel II, and the pharaohflies pollinate the..." "Jim, please." Jim took that to mean he should stop for now, and since Spock himself wasn't sure what he'd meant, he followed Jim's lead. Kirk just smiled, letting go of Spock's hand. Spock took several seconds to collect himself, but it wasn't easy when Jim fixed him with his steady gaze, a lock of silky brown hair falling over his eye. "Hey, can I ask you something?" Jim bit his lip. They were still almost sitting in each other's laps in the grass. "What's a mind meld like? I'm not asking to do one. That would be presumptuous. Unless it's rude for me to even ask, of course. I'm not sure." He laughed in a self-deprecating manner. "I'm sorry. You know, forget it. I am not offended by the question," Spock said. "It is a telepathic connection Vulcans are able to form, traditionally with each other, but also with others. It can be quite intense. And it's very intimate." "Oh," Jim smiled shyly, glancing away. "Yeah, I should probably not invite you to see the crazy up here. I do want you to like me." "I do like you," Spock said automatically. And Jim looked at him with a not quite smile on his face, as if that might have been surprise. But the idea of melding with Jim was tempting, even if Spock knew better than to go for it just because he was so aroused. The trouble was that Vulcans melded at the very beginning of a courtship, yet for humans it seemed like something that would be considered too much too soon. He'd never brought it up to Christine at all in their short time together. He could at least inform Jim of the option, however. "Through the meld, you can share thoughts, memories, emotions," Spock said. "Sometimes it is simply a way of sharing information, more conveniently. But it can be an agent of relationship bonding. We're touch telepaths, so generally, we must touch the subject." Kirk nodded. "How?" "We place our fingers." He raised his hands and touched Jim's meld points, staring into his eyes. "Like this, and oh." The connection was instant and overwhelming. Spock had not attempted a connection at all, but Jim's mind seemed to reach out and embrace him, and his eyes slipped shut of his own volition as he tumbled into a warm ocean of thought and feeling, Jim's sharp intelligence and charisma pervading it all in soft lights. A tide of Jim's self carried Spock along before he summed up the will to remove himself and broke the connection, a difficult act of self-control. "Whoa," Jim gaped at him. "What was that?" "I did not do it on purpose," Spock said, a little breathless. "I was not attempting to meld, I assure you. It's okay." "It's okay. It was amazing." "I thought you were Psi Null," Spock said. "The vast majority of humans." "As in no telepathic ability?" Jim said. "Oh yeah, no, I got nothing." "Your mind instigated that connection," Spock insisted. "It was not unpleasant in any way, but determined." Kirk was still staring at him a little blankly, perhaps overwhelmed himself at the experience. Spock blurted out, "Your mind wanted my mind." "You're saying my mind threw itself at you?" Jim said. He bit his lip, clearly amused. "That would be just like my brain." He covered his face with his hands. "Oh, my God. Your consciousness is compelling." "You're a very dynamic individual," Spock said, which was an understatement considering how much he wanted to say, as Christine would fuck it and go full meld. That mind called to him. "I did not want to leave. Jim, it seems as though we are quite drawn to each other. Perhaps I am stating the obvious, but I have not experienced a connection to anyone like this before."
"I'm glad you said it," Jim said.
"I feel the same, but you make it sound logical." He gave Spock a long look and got to his feet, offering his hand to help Spock. "Maybe let's walk around after all, huh?" Spock gave him a questioning look and Jim rolled his eyes sheepish. "If I start touching you again, I'm not going to want to stop, and we can't stay here much longer." Spock sensed that the both of them were a little riled up and also sensitive given the revelation of this connection, though if Spock thought about it, none of this was much of a surprise. Every time they'd spoken on the Enterprise, almost from the moment they'd met, Spock had felt an inclination to get closer to Kirk, not just physically or romantically, but in ways he could not quite put into words. They made their way deeper through the forest, and Spock reeled off facts about the plant life, because that seemed to please Jim to no end. Yet in the meantime, he was a little distracted by the trace of Jim's presence he still felt in his mind. There was a link there. Nothing so substantial as a bond, but he suspected he might be able to reach Jim without touch. It was sorely tempting, but he would not try it now. The thought was as exciting as was the thought of pushing him against a tree and shoving a hand down his pants, which was also tempting, but it was going to start to rain soon, and they were in public, technically. He clasped his hands behind his back, locking them there. Spock was scanning the thick growth of flowers and shrubs behind a squat palm tree and frowned. "Jim."
"Hmm?
What is it?" Spock stepped down into the grass, pushing past a giant fern and squatting down next to an orange flower. "This does not belong here."
"No?"
Kirk squatted down next to him and examined the orange flowers, their petals thick and the stems almost rubbery, retaining a lot of water. "They do look different than anything else here, more like a succulent."
"Precisely," Spock agreed. "It is a desert flower. We have a similar species on Vulcan. It has no business in a tropical forest. It would be overwatered by the downpour and die in the next 36 hours.
"Why would they?" Kirk pushed away some low branches to take a look at the soil beneath the flower. "Mr. Spock, look at this. This was planted very recently. You can tell by the way the soil lies." "The burial appears shallow as well," Spock said. Spock watched Jim wait a beat, and then gently he started digging up the flower with his fingers, pushing away the fresh soil.
"Commander, are you certain you should be doing that?"
"I just have a sneaking suspicion there's something more to this," Jim muttered.
"You're right. The roots are just all on top here, like it wasn't really planted. There's something here just under it."
Jim pulled a cube-shaped device out of the soil and turning it over revealed a timer on the bottom, counting back from 1802.
I didn't need to read Ophessa's Botany of a Thousand Worlds to know this has nothing to do with plants. Spock noted the abrupt tension in his voice. No, Spock said. That is an explosive. He examined the device, where he suspected the triggering mechanism connected to cylinders full of explosive. Infernite. Kirk spoke rapidly, immediately in command mode. We have 18 minutes to shoot this out an airlock. Evacuation is protocol, but there is no time. Suggestions? I can disarm it, Spock said, gingerly taking the device from Kirk. There is a higher likelihood of my success given the allotted time. Disarm it with what? Your fingers? Spock reached into his jacket pocket and slipped out Erica's Swiss Army knife, flipping out the mini hyperspanner, immediately getting to work, unscrewing the bottom panel of the cube. Go, Commander. We must contact security, or Captain Pike, or your Captain Lulo. Whoever planted this is likely still on the station. I doubt it was the Andorian at the front desk. Spock. I will disarm it, Spock insisted. Infernite, ignited in this manner, would explode downward. The deck below the Arboretum is likely more vulnerable due to its containment of the soil. It was an excellent hiding spot, unless you happen to notice an out-of-place succulent. I cannot leave you here, Jim said quietly. If I do fail, Spock said, placing the cube in his lap and gently lifting off the panel. You must be alive to aid in an investigation. You know that. There may be other explosive devices on the station. We do not know what this is about. I know, Jim said tightly. I know. Jim clapped a hand to his face and kissed him quickly before jumping up and running away back to the front entrance, and Spock heard him flipping open his communicator and speaking into it with great urgency. 1721. Spock's hands were steady. He was not nervous. The desperate immediacy of the moment was something he was used to some degree. Compartmentalization kicked in. Death was a possibility, but to consider it at all now would only impede him in his goal. He dissected the device piece by piece. The mechanics of it were not obvious, the triggering mechanism counterintuitive, and 97 seconds passed, during which he had to sit and think, unpuzzling the puzzle, until he was confident he could remove the trigger and the infernite cylinders which revealed beneath it a tiny clear container that made Spock catch his breath. Antimatter. A tiny amount of antimatter connected to a second trigger which connected to the infernite. The infernite was intended to set off the antimatter. Clumsy. Inelegant. Massively destructive. If ignited, it would be carried through the downward explosion. The bomb was rigged explicitly to destroy the entire bottom half of the station, everything on the Arboretum's level and below, while the level above was able to detach, similar to the Enterprise's saucer section. Approximately 5,000 casualties if ignited, Spock estimated. Spock swallowed, less sure of himself on this second trigger. 1558. He heard the voices before their footsteps. Three voices speaking standard, one of which sounded familiar. Immediately, Spock imagined they were innocent bystanders and that he needed to get them out of here in case he was not able to defuse the bomb. But he kept working, shaving the wire around the antimatter trigger with the edge of his knife, because to snip this particular wire would likely give off a spark, something he was not about to do next to an armed cylinder full of antimatter. I don't understand, the more familiar voice said. Why are we coming down here with 15 minutes to go? I've done everything you've told me. We have plenty of time, another voice said. There was a slight accent Spock found odd. Then the voices got so close, the subject matter of the conversation so suspicious, that Spock slipped the knife back in his pocket and jumped to his feet, ducking behind the nearest tree. You have been acting foolishly, a third voice said. The voices were much louder now, almost to the bomb site. We want to show you this is not a joke, Admiral, but perhaps we will simply leave you here to go down with the lower decks of the station. Spock peeked around the tree and saw them across the dirt trail. They had not spotted the bomb site. The man with the familiar voice was Admiral Stoichi, and Spock breathed slowly, processing astonishment. A highly influential figure in Starfleet. He had given the keynote at Spock's graduation. The other two men were Vulcans and close to his age by the look of them. Spock stared, counting down the seconds.
"No, no, I'm sorry," Stoichi said. I know it's not a joke. I'm sorry."
"You should be. You nearly blew our cover, Admiral." A smacking sound, and the stuttering man grunted.
No more mistakes," Stoichi said firmly. "I promise you. I must get back now. I must be seen at dinner on level 12 before the explosion."
"Go then," the first said. "Remember what we told you." Spock calculated that if by some miracle, not that he believed in miracles, the Vulcans inexplicably left without checking on their planted bomb, he would still have plenty of time to defuse the antimatter. Instead, he heard the Admiral running back through the forest, though in the opposite direction of the front entrance, which surely meant there was a hidden exit he was unaware of. 11:47. The downpour began. As it was an artificial rainstorm, there was no introductory drizzle, just an abrupt onslaught, a rain much harder than Spock might have expected. He squinted. The canopy of the forest was not thick enough to provide cover. It would make disarming the bomb more difficult. Then,
"Pekin," the first Vulcan said, "someone has been here. The Infernite is disarmed." "Fix it then, idiot. You're the expert. Who has found us out?"
The apparent expert knelt at the side of the bomb.
"I can rearm it, but where did they go?"
"I'm sure they're gone. We've scared them off."
"They are not gone," Spock said, stepping out from behind the tree. He moved swiftly. Up close, just before Spock surprised the Vulcan still standing with a lightning fast kick to his upper right abdominal, and even when the Vulcan reacted just as Spock predicted, not taken down but brought to his knees in the mud, Spock realized with near certainty that neither of these plotters were Vulcan. Upon hearing them speak, he'd assumed Vatosh Kattur like his brother, but there was something different about them. Vulcan disguise, maybe? Their clothing was gray and nondescript. Spock had just enough time as the kicked, not Vulcan, collected himself to nerve-pinch the bomb expert before he could get to his feet. The expert fell over on his face into a rapidly growing puddle of rain. Then it was merely one-on-one. He was wearing rubber-soled shoes and in mud, not as sure-footed as he was used to. His throat punch was countered, and he caught a kick to his kidneys that threw him sideways even as he gripped his opponent's leg and flipped him on his back. His enemy's strength was equal to his own. If they weren't Vulcans, they were as strong as Vulcans. Spock reached to nerve pinch again, but his opponent caught his arm and attempted to slam him into a tree face first. Spock saw the move coming and brought his momentum forward, using the man's body for leverage and running up the tree trunk to flip himself over his opponent instead. But as he landed, his leg was swept and he slid to his side in the mud.
"Who are you?" Spock said.
He rolled over and hopped to his feet, narrowly avoiding one hit while catching another to the temple that took him more than a fraction of a second to recover from. His head rang.
"You are not Vulcan."
"You don't say."
The enemy had caught a bloody lip. His blood was green. He licked the oozing blood, grinning at Spock maniacally as the rain poured down on them. Spock ducked under a boot coming at his face and spin-kicked his opponent in the back, but he hardly stumbled.
"Hope you're not supposed to be one of the smart ones."
"You are Vulcan," Spock said.
Now they faced each other, rain plastering Spock's hair to his head. He shoved it back.
"Make up your mind. You must be Starfleet," the enemy said. "They're all brainless, from what I understand."
"What are you?"
5:14.
"We have 5 minutes, Starfleet," the opponent said, laughing.
"How long a conversation do you want this to be?" The fist coming was quick, but Spock was quicker. He caught it with his right while managing a nerve pinch the enemy didn't see coming with his left. The opponent of a potentially Vulcan heritage, or not, crumpled into the thickening mud.
"Not long," Spock said.
He wiped rainwater from his eyes as he knelt in the mud, focused once again on the bomb and dwindling timer as he whipped out Erica's Swiss Army knife again. The bomb was half sunken into the mud and full of water, which fortunately had no bearing on its disarmament, but it was much harder to see. That was fine. He was just trying to defuse an antimatter bomb, the stability of which he now questioned, having now been introduced to the bomb expert who may or may not have designed it. The antimatter trigger was touchy and delicate. It made the Infernite trigger look quite simple. His hand still did not shake, though the grip on the knife as he removed a wire with tweezer attachment was slippery. Drops of rain kept catching in his eyelashes, blurring his vision. And then there were 17 seconds left, and despite his careful compartmentalization, Spock was overly aware of his heartbeat and the blood in his veins and the thought of most of the crew of the Enterprise and the Farragut and everyone else on the decks below the Arboretum relying on him and not knowing it, all except Jim, who was supposed to go explore deep space, and Spock was supposed to be with him. He was sure of it, perhaps not in Jim's poetic destiny sort of way, but he was certain he was the best person for the job, and it was selfish and irrational to wish that Jim specifically was above the Arboretum, whatever it was he was doing, and 03. The last trigger to the detonator detached with a click just as the timer hit 02, and Spock had nothing left to do but wait and see if the timer stopped or find out instantly that he had missed something. He would likely have a moment for the realization to occur before a quick death. 02. The timer had frozen. Spock sat back in the mud, soaked to the skin, rain beating down on him, and realized his fingers ached as he'd been gripping the knife so hard. He flicked it closed and pocketed it again, wondering how he could make it up to Erica for loaning him the knife, for luck. Only now did his hands begin to tremble. Curious. He shook them out and let out a long, slow breath. Obviously, he could not leave the bomb here with the two bombers. Spock gently detached the tiny container of antimatter and slipped it in his pants pocket. He took off Pike's jacket and laid it out in the mud, then set the device in the middle and tied it up in a bundle. Before searching for an exit, he took one last look at the unconscious Vulcan, not Vulcans, searching their pockets. They carried only communicators, and Spock slipped them in his pockets too, his own communicator still eerily silent. He wondered what Jim was doing. Spock took out his communicator as he headed for the front exit. Spock to Commander Kirk. A voice that was definitely not Jim said, "This is Commander Kirk. Go ahead." Spock stared at the communicator and shut it before throwing it as far into the forest as he could. Then he ran for the front entrance. The front entrance was shut tight, its panel powered down, the work of the bombers, he suspected. Spock allowed himself a heavy sigh, clutching the jacket bomb to his chest before turning around to search for a secondary exit. There was one, he was sure. Admiral Stoichi had left somehow. A hidden door in the back, perhaps. But Spock did not find it immediately and felt keenly the passage of time, along with the new knowledge that someone had taken Jim's communicator, which meant Jim might also be hurt somewhere on the station, or even dead. Spock had to find him. First, he had to find a Jeffries tube, also made more difficult in the rain. But finally, he was climbing a ladder, crawling into the quasi-familiarity of a narrow conduit. It was cold, and he was soaking wet, now down to a thin white t-shirt painted to his chest, not the most comfortable of scenarios. He wiped rain off his face again before crawling at a quick pace, the rubber soles of his sneakers squeaking. The worst part was awkwardly lugging his bundled-up bomb. "Peckin!" one of the bomber's communicators crackled, and Spock grabbed it from his pocket. "Peckin!" "The item did not engage. Peckin, come in." Spock pursed his lips and then answered, "This is Peckin." "Peckin, a Starfleet officer, is aware. Cannot say more here. He lost his comm in a dispute, but he left the conversation." "Where is he?" Spock blurted out. "Who is this?" Spock shut the communicator and considered whether it was worth carrying it around in case they said anything more about Jim. Whoever they were, they likely had the ability to track their own comms. He grimaced and threw them far behind him, back the way he'd just come, and crawled faster up an incline, then up a ladder, then straight on. Jim was definitely in danger, but Spock had no idea where he was. He paused in the middle of the tube, cold and wet, and searched his mind for the trace of the fragile link he'd created with Jim from the accidental meld. It was there. Whether Jim was at all aware of it or not was the question. "Jim, meet me on Deck 8. Hear this, Jim. Deck 8. Deck 8. Deck 8.
8. Spock concentrated on that mantra as he climbed a ladder, crawled some more, then climbed another ladder. When he finally heard the familiar dull roar of a small crowd from the vent below, he decided this was as good a place as any to exit and removed a hatch panel. He could not tell what he was jumping into, only that he could see a carpeted beige floor in low light. Soft music was playing. Spock lowered his legs through the hatch, his wallet chain dangling. He gripped the bomb bundle and jumped, dropping about 12 feet to the deck below him. He landed in a crouch, the jacketed bomb bonking his head as it fell after him. Everyone was staring at him. Spock had landed in the middle of one of Starbase 7's nicer restaurants, the kind frequented by admirals and diplomats. Bach was playing, and besides that, there was just the murmur of sophisticated conversation and the scraping of silver forks on plates. A Tellarite waiter carrying a tray froze, gaping at Spock, open-mouthed. Spock pushed his wet hair back, dripping on the carpet, and looked over to see Captain Pike, who also froze, a forkful of risotto on the way to his mouth and looking dapper in a silver short-collar jacket and vest. Spock? Captain Pike frowned. For a half second, Spock considered the possibility of luck. There was Pike. He would tell his captain exactly what was going on, and right next to Pike sat Admiral Stoichi, sipping wine. Of course. Stoichi looked perhaps normal if one did not know better, but Stoichi knew by now that something had gone wrong with the bomb. He did not look relieved about it. He was silently and extremely panicked by Spock's estimation. Not here. Thankfully, Stoichi had not seen him in the Arboretum. Pike said, Spock, what? Commander Chin Riley, Captain Lulo the Farragut, and three other important-looking people Spock did not recognize were also there. Una's head tilted of naked amusement was somehow more vexing. Captain, Spock said, nodding politely. He beelined his way out of the restaurant before anyone could question him. Behind him, he heard Pike say, that's my science officer. He's from Vulcan. Doesn't get out much. Good kid, though. Pike, Spock had no doubt, would be catching up with him later, if he didn't send Una to catch up with him first. Deck 8, Jim. Deck 8, Deck 8, Deck 8. Spock quickly discovered he was on Deck 12. According to the numbers rendered in gold on a plaque next to a wine bar, the plaza here was less crowded, more stately. Spock appeared completely out of place. He kept his head down and half ran to the turbolift. Deck 8, Spock said. And just before the doors closed, three Vulcans in traditional Vulcan robes stepped into the lift with him. Spock now found himself on guard for strangers who looked like Vulcans. But the bombers had been wearing gray jumpsuits, whereas these Vulcans were wearing Vulcan robes, and as impassive as Spock would otherwise expect. They were also staring at Spock, who appeared from their perspective incredibly suspicious, and who was also dripping on their boots. No doubt, they could also sense his turbulent emotions even without touching him. He could certainly sense their subtle side-eye at the very least. Spock threw up a ta'al, and one of the Vulcans looked him up and down, doubtless questioning the strange shoes, the wallet chain, the drenched clothing, and the leather bundle Spock gripped in one hand. The Vulcan raised an eyebrow before finally returning the gesture, and his companions followed his lead. Deck 8 was one of the more popular decks for most visitors to the starbase. The plaza was crowded as Spock stepped out of the lift on the lookout for both Jim and any suspicious-looking Vulcans. He rushed across the plaza, and his eyes were on a queue of people coming out of a theater when Jim barreled into him and grabbed his arm. Jim! Go, 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 go! Jim ran, dragging Spock with him. His sneaker squeaked as he stumbled for a moment, changing directions to run along with Jim, the bomb bundled under his other arm. Bad guys, bad guys! Spock glanced over his shoulder and saw three Vulcans behind a crowd looking right at him. He ran with Jim, who led him through the plaza and down a wide corridor, turning two corners and skidding around a third where they stumbled into a spa. They managed to startle a bunch of Andorians in towels who skittered away into a sauna. Come here, Jim yanked Spock by a fistful of wet t-shirt and pulled him into a tiled shower room where they caught their breath. I think they saw us, but he licked his lips. We got the jump on them. They are not Vulcans, Spock said firmly.
Nah, they're Romulans. They're just passing as Vulcan.
Romulans?
Spock balked and was about to question how Jim could possibly know that when he finally got a good look at him. He's lost his nice sweater. Now he wore a black tank top torn at the hem, his jaw and right eye purpling. When Spock looked down at Kirk's hand, he saw bloody knuckles. "You're hurt," Spock said. "Eh, it's fine. Had worse." "I do not like that, either," Spock muttered. "Shh, they're coming." Jim was peeking around the corner.
"I will take the two larger ones," Spock whispered.
"What larger ones?"
"Whichever two are larger, I will take them."
"What? Now?" Spock dropped his bundle and leapt out. In the space of an instant, he did not have enough time to properly gauge the sizes of his opponents after all, but was able to punch one Romulan in the throat just before administering a nerve pinch. Jim swung the second attacker around and slammed his face into the tile wall, but caught an elbow into his own already bruised face in return. The third targeted Spock, kicking him in the ribs. Spock grabbed his foot, swinging him around and tossing him into a hot tub, which at least it distracted him momentarily. He went for the opponent, attacking Jim, and pulled him back by the hair, quickly nerve-pinching him and letting him drop to the floor. That left the third, who had already climbed out of the hot tub and was surprisingly difficult for the two of them to take down, managing to slam Spock's head against the hard tile floor and nearly brain Kirk on a corner of a sink. Jim stunned him with a double-fisted hit, and Spock reached out to pinch the nerve and let him drop on top of his buddy. They stood catching their breath, and Jim squeezed his shoulder as he grabbed for the bomb bundle, careful not to let it out of his sight. "Remind me," Jim said, wiping away a drop of blood oozing from his nose. "Next time we decide to go on a date, I'm bringing a phaser."
"That may be wise."
"We got to find a place to lay low for a minute," Kirk said. He grabbed two bathrobes hanging on hooks and tossed one to Spock.
"Put this on, just in case there are more guys out there. Why are you all wet, anyway?"
"The downpour in the Arboretum."
"Oh, right. Forgot about the rain."
Spock put on the robe, pulling the hood up over his head, and he followed Jim back out, trusting him to know where they should be going to lay low. Spock ran after him into a corridor full of hotel suites and at a kiosk where Kirk quickly keyed in credit info, checked for a room under anonymous. He obtained a door code, and in seconds he was yanking Spock into a suite. Spock stumbled inside, dropped the jacketed bomb on the floor, and ripped off the bathrobe that was heavy and uncomfortable to wear over his wet clothes as Jim did the same.
"What is that?"
Jim said, nodding at the bundle.
"That is the explosive device," Spock said.
Jim's eyes went wide.
"You've been running around the starbase with a bomb?"
"It was the only logical option."
"You're a madman," Jim said.
He grinned and licked his lips, and abruptly he lunged, shoving Spock against the wall and attacking Spock's mouth with his own. Spock returned Jim's passion in kind, the excitement and tension of the last hour fizzing between them as Jim sucked on Spock's bottom lip and shoved the wet t-shirt up his chest, hands fevered on Spock's cool, damp skin.
"Fuck, you're so hot, it's insane."
Spock's hands gripped Jim's tantalizing biceps, and he wanted to feel that smooth skin under his fingers and the flexing muscles beneath it, perhaps bite Jim's bare shoulders and rip away the strap of Kirk's tank top with his teeth. But he let go for a moment to peel off his t-shirt, letting it splat on the deck as Jim spread his fingers along Spock's pectorals and leaned in to kiss his throat. Spock pulled away momentarily to take the antimatter container out of his pocket and set it gently on a console table by the door.
"What's that?" Jim said, breathless, as he sucked a hickey under Spock's ear.
"Antimatter," Spock murmured, slightly delirious as Kirk pressed his leg between Spock's. Jim broke away and gaped at Spock.
"Antimatter?"
"It was the most logical option," Jim mumbled, and then said something along the lines of, "Crazy, sexy fucking Vulcan," as Spock yanked the straps of Jim's tank a little too roughly and ripped the shirt down the middle.
"I thought you were going to die."
"It was very close," Spock said, and bent his head to kiss Jim's clavicle, which he had become a great fan of whenever it happened to be visible, not since Jim had trained in the gyms on the Enterprise.
"You require medical attention."
Yet he did not stop his ministrations, sucking a kiss to Jim's chest. "Don't tell me how close." There were 2 seconds left. "Fuck, Spock." Jim palmed Spock's cheek and raised his head to kiss his mouth again. "Next time we stick together, okay?" "Next time," Spock said, taking it for a joke. He raised an amused eyebrow. "Next time," Jim said, nodding. He cradled Spock's cheeks in his hands, his bright eyes serious as Spock had ever seen them. "When you're my person, when we're out there and you're by my side, you'll stay by my side. Yes?" "Yes," Spock said, and kissed him deeply, then spoke against his lips. "Yes, Jim." Spock pressed his palm to Jim's chest and took his time, feeling everything so intensely in the pads of sensitive fingers, firm pectoral muscles and the silky softness of 2 small nipples, and ripples of muscles that twitched under his touch. And beneath it all, the roar of Jim's desire. He lost track of their kiss, overwhelmed by so much to touch and mount along Jim's jaw, his left hand sliding down, fingers sneaking beneath the waistband of Jim's pants. "Spock," Jim had snaked his arms around Spock's neck. "That bet with the banana, was that legit? Do you want me to show you?" Spock said, a rumble in Jim's ear. "Are you kidding? What's that?" Jim mumbled. "A Vulcan riddle?" Spock felt Jim's amusement and arousal bubble over, and because Spock wasn't trying very hard to shield things these days, it came out in a husky chuckle just before he slowly got down on his knees. "Did you just laugh?" Jim said, as Spock unfastened his pants. "It is," Spock cleared his throat, "a sort of emotional transference, and I will explain later." "Sure, sure. Spock took Jim's half-hard cock in his mouth, as if it might save both their lives. It was not Spock's first time orally pleasuring a man with a penis. Back in Academy days, he and T'Pring had mutually decided that a period of sexual experimentation outside the bond would be permitted and might actually strengthen the relationship, as long as everyone was aware of what was going on. In fact, it was T'Pring's idea in the first place. They'd told each other about all their experiences, too, and there was no jealousy on either side, a fact T'Pring was quite proud of at the time, though she would have denied experiencing pride. Spock had discovered he rather enjoyed the sensation of a cock in his mouth after having blown an engineering cadet named Jeremy, who, despite Spock being clear that nothing more would ever happen between them beforehand, then followed him around for 3 months until T'Pring told him via video comm that his attention was not welcome, which was much more convincing coming from her. Spock had been satisfied just to have had the experience, certain that he would end up marrying T'Pring and never experiencing it again. He'd not thought of it very much until Jim Kirk started hanging around on the Enterprise following his breakup with T'Pring and then Christine. Then he'd wondered, what would that feel like with Jim? Then he'd wondered about it a lot, among other things. So perhaps his chocolate inebriation had been a bit of an excuse to let Jim know his skill with a banana following a whole lot of flirting. The reality was glorious. Jim was firm and hot and kind of salty, filling up his mouth, hitting the back of his throat as Spock gripped Jim's hips. He sucked in his cheeks, curling his tongue around Jim's cock, then gripping the base of Jim's erection, moving him in and out of the heat of his mouth, then all the way down his throat. He teared up a little, saliva collecting and dribbling down his chin. He could hold his breath longer than a human could, which helped. Meanwhile, Jim was panting and then taking stuttering breaths, his abdominal muscles quivering as Jim stroked his thumbs along them. He gasped Spock's name, and just that made Spock's cock throb. Yet he focused on his task as intensely as he focused on every task put before him. Wiry hairs tickled his nose. He found that part amusing. Spock tried fondling Jim's testicles, a little more tentative with those touches. Vulcans did not carry external testes. The first sight of Jeremy's balls had been slightly startling. Jim seemed to appreciate whatever Spock was trying, however, as he heard the thunk of a head hitting the door. "Spock,
I'm going to come in a second, so I don't know if you want to...
This part Spock had been a little nervous about, but had also looked forward to. He had decided very firmly that if he had this opportunity with Jim, he would take full advantage of it. Spock intensified his efforts, gripping Jim's hips more tightly. It was when he lifted his eyes to meet Jim's, his gaze as fierce as his intent, that Jim gripped at the back of his head and gasped, flooding Spock's mouth, with a taste that Spock could not say he liked, but which he allowed might be an acquired liking. Given the way things were going, it looked like he would have further opportunity to acquire it. Jim cried out and groaned, and Spock catalogued every little sound he made. He pulled off Jim's cock and felt a pair of wild eyes on him as he wiped his mouth with two fingers.
"I enjoyed that," Spock said, getting to his feet. He pressed against Jim again, kissing his throat and his shoulder. "The way your skin tastes."
Spock licked a stripe under his ear. It would be hyperbole to call it addictive, but maybe not. They should be discussing the situation now. They should be finding a way to safely contact Captain Pike. Jim required a dermal regenerator at the very least. They should be...
Spock. Jim kissed his mouth, a long, slow slide. "I want you to fuck me."
Or they could do this. Spock's response to that was a soft growl from the back of his throat, and he felt the way it set Jim's emotions on fire.
"Well, I like the sound of that," Jim whispered.
They stumbled to the bed, Jim stripping off his pants and underwear while kicking off his boots haphazardly. The room was small, the first vacancy Kirk had spotted at the kiosk in his fevered rush to get them out of public view. All the better. They collapsed on top of an orange duvet covering a double bed by the window. Jim knew precisely what he wanted, and Spock, by now trembling with unsated arousal, was happy to be manhandled into Jim's desired position. Jim pushed him down on his back and yanked his pants and briefs off, made more difficult by their dampness. He threw two wet socks over his shoulder. Erica's knife had fallen out of a pocket, and Jim grabbed it off the deck. "Hey, why didn't you use this in the fight?" Spock might have appreciated the comedy of Commander Kirk, completely nude, holding up a Swiss Army knife and challenging Spock's combat tactics. If he had not been trembling, his cock flushed chartreuse laying against his stomach as he clenched his fists.
"Why would I need a knife?" Spock stuttered.
"Actually, yeah, fair enough. Now we just need..." Jim set the knife on the nightstand and pulled open a drawer. He pulled out a plastic packet of lubricant. "Voila, it's that kind of place." Jim straddled Spock on the bed and ripped the packet open with his teeth as Spock spread his hands along Jim's thighs, resisting some primal urge to flip their positions and have his way. He gritted his teeth when Kirk slathered his cock with lube and did not realize he was already moaning Jim's name until Kirk leaned forward and kissed the sound from his lips. Jim reached back and fingered himself, something Spock might have thought would be awkward, yet in the moment he was only incredibly turned on, if only because of the way Jim looked at him as he did so.
Kirk blushed crimson. "I actually prepared myself extensively, just, you know, in case the opportunity arose. Did not prepare myself for the bombing conspiracy, however." He laughed to himself. "Was that presumptuous?"
"Apparently not," Spock said. And then Kirk was shifting, taking Spock's cock in his hand and slowly impaling himself. Spock was already near the edge, if not at it. And now, being inside Jim, he felt a buzz all through his body just next door to a fall into bliss. His mouth was wide open as he stared up at Jim.
"Holy shit," Jim murmured, reeling off a number of other obscenities, bracing his hands on Spock's chest. "Spock, Spock, Spock. God, you feel so good."
Then he began to move, rocking against Spock, who teared up and rocked back, meeting Jim's rhythm. Jim moved faster, nuzzling Spock's neck.
"I see stars."
Spock frowned.
"Are you well? You did receive a blow to the head."
"No, no," Jim said, chuckling even as he continued to rock against Spock. He leaned back and kissed the tip of his nose and his cheek.
I mean, I see us up there, he whispered, in the stars, seeing places no one's ever seen. I'm sure of it. I want that. Spock's voice cracked, desperate desire overcoming him. I want that, Jim. I want you. What he wanted to say was, I want you for the remainder of our lives. For as long as we are fortunate enough to both exist together, we should not be parted. Was this far too much after some chess games and a drunk dial? Spock did not know. The intricacies of human courting still seemed a great mystery. And Christine's concept of Schrödinger's relationship had not clarified anything. He wrapped his arms around Jim and flipped them over, seeing Jim's expression of delighted shock. He pressed Jim's legs back and pulled out of him, shuddering. With all the feeling that thought of permanency between them brought, he thrust into Jim and then did so again and again, pesky human neurosis creating some illogical idea that if he fucked Jim well enough, this wish would come true. Only later did he realize he had been attempting to deliberately create a bond. Did you hear me when I said deck 8? Can you hear me, Jim? I did, Jim whispered. I do. Spock gaped at him, a lopsided smile escaping his control. Oh God, come here, come here. Jim clapped his hand to Spock's neck, bringing him in for a kiss before Spock pulled away again, wanting to meet Jim's gaze as he tumbled toward the edge. Spock shifted slightly and Jim gripped his shoulders, his heels digging into Spock's hips. Fuck, yes, Spock, yes, right there. The sight of Jim's ecstasy threw Spock off his cliff and he bellowed, a feeling like white light encompassing him, the sense of Jim's self touching every nerve just right as Spock spilled inside him, and he drove in harder and faster at first and then slower, and much slower, Jim pressing kisses to his face and throat. Tentatively, he laid down on top of Jim. Is this uncomfortable? No. Jim kissed his hair. Stay right here a minute. Spock relaxed, resting his head on Jim's chest. They were quiet for as long as 5 seconds before Spock said, How do you know the conspirators are Romulans? So, when I left you in the Arboretum, Jim said, his fingers lightly tracing lines up and down Spock's bicep, first I tried to contact our people. I got La'an, told her to meet me at the Arboretum with security backup, but they must have been listening to comms, at least Starfleet comms. They caught me before I even got there, pulled me into some stockroom, and made me call up La'an and tell her everything was fine. They took my communicator, and they were just going to kill me, but I fought them off and got away. But two of them were talking while they held me. They were talking about coming from Sector Z. That's right on top of the neutral zone. And the surveillance of the comms? I just read a report Pike sent me on Romulan surveillance. It fits. I don't think they're in disguise, either. We don't know what Romulans look like. Who's to say they don't look just like Vulcans? Spock did not fail to notice that Jim also jumped right back into work talk the moment intercourse had completed. It pleased him they were alike in that way. Captain Pike also sent me that report. Spock said, I have not read it yet. Admiral Stoichi is also a conspirator, though he sounds as if he has been coerced. I saw him in the Arboretum. I was nearly stopped from disassembling the bomb. Then he went to dinner with Captain Pike. Stoichi? Starbase security, open up. Spock and Jim looked at each other and instantly leapt out of the bed. We're Starfleet, Jim yelped, scrambling to put his underwear back on. Commander James T. Kirk. That's nice, the angry voice at the door said. We're overriding the door control now. Spock barely managed to zip the fly of Erica's great-grandfather's damp pants and slip on his sneakers. Shirts a distant wish as the door slid open and 3 Starbase security officers swept in, phasers raised. Fasten your pants, Commander. The lead security officer was a rail-thin, bald man. You and the Vulcan are under arrest. For what? For this, I imagine. A second security officer, a petite human woman, with spiked blue hair, gingerly picked up the bomb bundle as Spock said, Be careful with that. Our sensors picked up an explosive device, the woman said. We tracked it to this room. Why didn't they pick it up 2 hours ago? Jim said. though he was careful to keep his hands raised. Is this antimatter? The lead officer picked it up off the console table. Cuff them. You can tell your story from the brig. Let's go. Please retrieve that knife for me, Spock pointed, careful not to grab the weapon himself. It is not mine. I must return it. The officer in charge snorted and pocketed the knife, which came along with the bomb, the antimatter, and Pike's jacket, as Jim and Spock were frog-marched shirtless out into the corridor and up three decks to a security station. Well, Jim said, sighing, here's another nice mess we've gotten ourselves into. They sat close together on a bench in a brig, which Spock decided was not nearly as nice of a brig as the Enterprise's. Spock supposed they could be thankful they were jailed together, though he would have appreciated shirts. I do not see how the Romulans could have managed such involved surveillance of comms here without some kind of collusion from within the starbase, Spock said. I agree. Jim stretched his legs out in front of him, his boots nudging Spock's Converse. And now we know Stoichi's in on it. I think we don't say a damn thing more than we have until we can talk to Pike or Lulo. That is sound, Spock said, nodding. He still felt sensitized from the sex, every touch a little overwhelming. We may be here for a protracted amount of time. That's true, Jim smiled slyly as he gently turned Spock's head to face him and kissed him deeply. Got some time to kill, I guess. Spock's lap was full of Jim Kirk as they lazily kissed when the loud clearing of a throat made them startle and Jim tumbled to the floor. Captain Pike stood on the other side of the brig's force field, looking equal parts irritated and amused. He licked his lips and gestured vaguely with his hands. What exactly has happened here? Because it's not as if I think you two tried to blow up the starbase. At least not on your first date. Spock flushed, suddenly self-conscious of his half-nakedness, as well as what the captain he thought of as a surrogate father had just walked in on. We found a bomb, Kirk said. He jumped into a parade rest, appearing completely unconcerned about how he had been found. Spock found this admirable. Spock stood quickly and followed Jim's lead as he continued. Captain, we uncovered an explosive device in the Starbase's arboretum. It was hidden there after the arboretum had closed. Spock disassembled it as I attempted to contact backup, but we were both attacked by multiple agents of the conspiracy. They looked exactly like Vulcans, but did not act like them, at least around us. I suspect they are Romulans. Captain, Admiral Stoichi is also in collusion with these actors, Spock said. He knew of the bomb plot. I was able to hear some of his conversation with two Romulan agents, if indeed they are Romulan. He has been compromised in some way. Stoichi. Pike shook his head. That would explain a lot. Should have seen him at dinner. He was sweating into his bruschetta. One more thing, Pike said, holding up a finger. What were you doing just hanging out in that hotel suite with a bomb when... We figured we'd lay low for a bit, Kirk said. We were laying low, Spock mumbled. Uh-huh, Spock nodded, eyes rolling a little. Well, they just found a few supposed Vulcans unconscious in the spa and the arboretum, so I imagine they'll be taking your place in the brig. Give me a minute here. A minute turned into another 2 hours before they were let out of the brig to go with Pike back to the hotel suite for an informal debriefing, as they still had a few hours before they were allowed back on their respective ships. This was not how I initially envisioned our first date, Commander, Spock said, raising an eyebrow as they exited the brig. I think it's the best date I've ever been on, Kirk said, winking at him. How about you? Affirmative. Listen, Kirk said, leaning in to speak quietly in his ear as they walked. I think I've seen enough of Starbase 7 for a bit. When they let us back on our ships, what do you think about me coming over to the Enterprise for a while? I'd like to hang out with Sam for a bit this week. But otherwise, if you want to just, he raised a hopeful eyebrow, spend the rest of our week in my quarters on the Enterprise, Spock said, lowering his voice because he'd noticed already how that particular tone made Kirk go a little pink in the cheeks. But Commander, what will we do with our time? Jim only answered him with a knowing smirk. Hey, put this on and cover up for God's sake, Pike said, tossing Spock the jacket. He'd found a fresh t-shirt for Kirk and tossed it to him.
Spock put the jacket back on, finding the knife in his pocket. Pike squinted, cocking his head. Is that my jacket? The end.